Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. This week, Pastor Janetta continues our series, The Gospel According to John.
Good morning. My name is Janetta Herrera, and I am one of the pastors here at Olathe Wesleyan and also part of the teaching team. So give me just a second while I get this set up a bit. I would like to introduce you to some people. I think that you'll see them up on the screen. Now, can you see them? Okay, cool. Up in this left-hand corner, they are known as Leo and Letha Welch, otherwise Grandma and Grandpa, to me. Over on the other side, it is known as Daisy and Glenn Cockrell, otherwise known as Papa and Grandma, to me. And right in the middle is Jean and Iveta Cockrell, otherwise known as Mom and Dad, to me. This picture up on this side was the 50th wedding anniversary of my grandpa and grandma Welch. Picture on the other side is the 50th wedding anniversary of my grandma and grandpa Cockrell. The picture in the middle was taken about two and a half months before my mom died at the age of 62. So they didn't get to celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary. My mom died of ovarian cancer, and she struggled with that, which there isn't a cure, and she struggled with that for about 2.5 years. When it was discovered that she had the ovarian cancer, my grandma up on this side, grandpa had already gone to be with, had passed away, and my grandma Letha realized that mom wasn't going to live, and who was going to be there to tell the stories of the family? How was it going to get passed on? So grandma really wanted those in the next generations to come to understand the character of those top four people. Because who would know? Grandma spent those next 2 years compiling all kinds of information. She got the genealogy charts done, and she researched, and she got letters in, and she found newspaper clippings, and she was forever at the library and pulling things together and pictures, and she put it all together in a couple of books. One book was called The Branches, and I don't remember the name of the other book, but she had it all together. And as you would go through it, you began to see how much Grandma painstakingly had gone through tons of stuff to pull out stories and to pull out things that would show us the character, the generations to come, would show us the character of those top four people. We found stories that she shared that was about their hard life. I mean, they grew up in the Depression, and the hard life was hard. You know, they grew up, two of them grew up, my grandpa and grandma Cockrell on that side grew up way over the outside in the western Kansas area and in Oklahoma. My grandpa and grandma Letha grew up in Michigan and Indiana areas way down, and they had to work very hard, very hard. So that was one of the character qualities we found out. They were very hard-working people. We found out that my grandpa up there on the left, on the whatever that side is when you all are looking in that direction, Grandpa Cockrell, had to leave school, the one that grew up out west, and worked and he could repair all kinds of small engines of anything, you know, where there's a toaster, which wasn't an engine, but a small appliances to little cars, and he did a great job at it. In fact, he did so good at it that people were wanting to come to him, and because he was the only one around in the area, he would overcharge people for his work. And Grandpa had this great business. We found out that my grandpa on the other side, his mom died early, that caused his dad to go into depression, and he hung himself. So my grandpa on this side grew up basically an orphan. Couldn't finish school. Yet in their young adult lives, something happened. In their young adult lives, somebody shared Jesus with them. And on that side over there, my grandpa committed his life to Christ after they had been married and after they had had my dad. During the Depression, he committed his life to Christ and realized that how he had been acting was wrong. In the stories that Grandma gave us, we found out that Grandpa went back and paid people or gave back what he had overcharged during the Depression. Quite amazing. We found out that Grandpa on the other side came to know Jesus as a young adult as well. That somehow in the family that raised him, because neither one of them grew up in Christian homes, but the family that raised him shared about Jesus. We found out that Grandpa and Grandpa on this side went back and finished college. Now, how do you go to college when you never had finished high school? They did all the hard work they needed to do to be able to go to college. We found out that Grandma Letha on this side became a kindergarten teacher and chose to teach to kids that today would be considered very low income Head Start kids that nobody wanted. We found out that Grandma would take those little kindergarten kids that nobody wanted and would teach them how to do things with their fingers, like crochet, because learning to do stuff like this also helps your brain begin to work so you can read. Way before her time, Grandma knew. We found out that Grandma on the other side always opened her home to people. Always. So when we looked at the character qualities, and there's no way that I can tell you this stuff. There was way too much stuff, just like there was way too much stuff that Grandma had to go through to put together what she wanted us to know about them. But what she wanted us to know about them was that they were hardworking, that they overcame things in their life that was difficult, didn't make them wealthy, didn't make them famous, but it sure led them to Jesus, and it helped them to become godly. Both of those couples, all the rest of their lives, was in full-time ministry without pay most of the time. We found out that both of those couples broke, I wanted to say Breaking Bad, because I like that term, but I don't like that show. But I like the Breaking Bad because they broke the bad that had been in the heritage and gave to those two a foundation of character that was important. Now, those books that my grandma wrote and put together showed us, the next generations, how much she loved us. How much she loved all of them. Because she took so much work putting the story together so that we could come to love in the same way that she did all that had happened and what God had done. Those books are now in Chicago, where my brother is putting together those things on those next two for the generations to come. You know, I think that's a very amazing thing that my grandma did. Those books remind me of the book of John. The book of John was written by the disciple who loved Jesus. And I think more importantly, it says it was written by the disciple that Jesus loved. Sorry, I got that wrong. But I think more importantly, it shows that John loved Jesus. John painstakingly went through all the stuff that happened in 3 years to pull out stories that would show us the character of Jesus, like my grandma did. He pulled out stuff that would tell us and show us beyond a shadow of a doubt who Jesus was. He wanted us to know. I consider that work that my grandma did to be a gift of love to me. As I was preparing for this sermon, I had a huge panic attack because I couldn't find them. I couldn't find those books. I had Gilbert going through every box and thing that we had up in the attic. And it's like, I know we got them. I know we got them. Where are they? Where are they? And then he goes, Dad, remember? They're in Chicago. I was like, oh, shoot. Because that was a gift of love. John has given us a gift of love in this book of John. So let's quickly look at the first 11 chapters that we have gone through in the book of John. The cool thing is, John has picked out this stuff that gives us 7 signs. I want the miraculous to be really small, because what I want you to see is that they are 7 signs that show us who Jesus is. First one, changing the water into wine. Second one, healing the official's son. And he healed him when he was away. The son was in Capernaum and Jesus was away. Healing the lame man from the pool of Bethsaida. I mean, he'd been there for 40 years lame. Feeding the 5,000 plus people with a teeny bit of food. Jesus walking on water. And not the pretending kind where there's glass underneath and the rocks. I mean, literally walking on water. How he overcame the physical properties of stuff. Jesus healing the man that had been born blind. And then last week, Daniel shared with us sign number 7, which was raising of Lazarus from the dead after he had been dead and buried for 4 days. All the smells of death, everything that was there, but Jesus overpowered even that. Those 7 things show us that Jesus is the Christ. Those 7 things show us that Jesus is God. That's it. Jesus is God. Just like my grandma picked out this stuff for us. Look, this is the character of us. There you go. Jesus is God. And then we come to chapter 12. I look at chapter 12 and I read it and went through it. And I said, you know what? Chapter 12 reminds me of this 3-act play. You know what a 3-act play is? The first act, what's introduced is like the what is possibly going to be the conflict. And you have your characters that are there. And then you have the second act of the play where it is pretty well determined by the antagonist. That's the evil one. By the antagonist, what they're going to do to solve the conflict. And then the third act is the resolution. Chapter 12, to me, is a 3-act play. So, if you're okay, I'd like you just to listen or look up here. You don't have to mess with you. You don't have to look at the papers right now. I want to go through those 3 acts of the play. Act 1 starts. You know, Act 1 was quite amazing. It occurred 6 days before the Passover. Passover is a big deal. That's a big, big, big week. And Jesus had just healed Lazarus. And Jesus decided that before that they were going into the Passover, that he was going to go back to Bethany where Lazarus had been. And as he goes back there, he goes to a home. We don't know who exactly the home belongs to. But what we do know is that in that home, Martha prepares a dinner. So we've got Lazarus, who was raised from the dead. We've got Martha, and we've got Mary, Martha's sister. And we have all 12 of the disciples. And there's some other people there, because it might be somebody else's home that's there. We don't know, but that's a lot of people to just cook for. And Martha is cooking up a big meal. As she does this big meal, and they're all eating around together. Now, back in that, during that 1-act play, so keep this in your head, during this first act there, they're all sitting around or laying around eating, and all of this is coming along, and in comes Mary, and she brings with her this container of oil. Now, this container of oil was very expensive because this oil was used as burial oil. And it says that the container of oil could cost up to a year or more of your salary. Okay, even back then, dying was expensive. It just cost money. Even back then, it cost money to die. And this oil might have been used partly for Lazarus. But Mary took the rest of that oil, and as she gets down in front of Jesus, she pours that oil on his feet. And as she pours it on his feet, the hair, the long part of her hair is over, and she dries the oil up with the rest of her hair. That's really neat. And that was really loving. But off to the side was one of the disciples who just started getting extremely angry. He got so angry that he began to raise his voice and to holler. And it was like, come on, you could have just sold that oil for lots of money and given it to the poor. And Jesus went, stop, leave her alone. the poor you're always going to have with you. But me, not so much. That really angered the guy who had hollered. That guy's name was Judas. Judas Iscariot. Judas, we now know, was the one who was going to sold Jesus in to be crucified. Here he goes. He's angry. And then around through the windows and all come around in this act, one act, come all of these people because they had heard that the person who had raised Lazarus from the dead was in town. And they wanted to see him. So they're all coming around. And all of a sudden we now have a group of people looking at who this Jesus is. And in this group of people looking to see who Jesus is, we also see some religious leaders. And they're watching to see what the world has happened. And now they're listening and they hear that these people are all praising Jesus for what he did in raising Lazarus from the dead. And now here's Lazarus, and they can't refute it because there's Lazarus and they already knew he was dead. So they come up with this brilliant plan. Let's kill Jesus and Lazarus because it's Lazarus' fault that people are paying attention to Jesus. Now, come on. That's kind of stupid. Don't you think? We are now at the end of Act 1. Act 2. I've called it the Palms. Act 2 begins with Jesus deciding that, you know, we need to go to Jerusalem for Passover. People start hearing that Jesus is coming into Jerusalem, and they were really excited because it's like, oh, they're going to show this group of people with Jesus and his disciples, they're going to stick it to those Pharisees for how they're acting. And they're coming in, and they're making noise, and it's going to be wonderful, and those religious leaders, they now are going to be put in their place. So the people that hear that Jesus is coming into Jerusalem go and they grab some palms, because if you take a palm and wave it back in that day, that was honor to people like that would be coming back in from a battle or for the honoring of a king or whatever it might be. It was somebody that was very important. And so they wanted to pay homage to this. As they're waving those palms on that Sunday or that day, they started chanting and singing. And I'm thinking, what in the world would that have been like? And the only thing I can even come close to that thinking is it was like when the Royals won. And here we are, we're all loaded down there by them. And you would hear throughout the time that we were down there, how many of y'all went down? Just me? Come on. What? That's all? Are you serious? You missed it. Shame on you. So they were, but you would hear throughout that time, let's go Royals. Now, you might not hear that right now because those last two games were pretty bad, but I mean, you know, you would hear this chanting all around, and it was so amazing, and it was so honoring, and what their chanting was saying was like, you know what? You are the king. You are the king. You are our king, and you are now here. And it was an amazing thing. And Jesus grabs a donkey. Seriously? He should have gotten a chariot, a horse, or even a camel. That's what people that were going to be leaders would grab. But he grabbed a donkey. And he goes and rides on a donkey. The Pharisees are off to the side. And they're going, look at this. Look at these people. No way out. Nothing we can do now except to kill. Act 2 ends with the killing. Decided, not done. Now we go to Act 3. You know, when you look at Act 3, Act 3 is the resolution to the problem. When we looked at Act 3, we see that Act 3 starts out with some Greeks that happen to be in town in Jerusalem. And you know, if you've ever visited in another country or been a part of something else, it's really cool when you run across somebody that is from your very same area. My sister and I were in Germany, and I don't even remember the town that we were in, but we wanted McDonald's in Germany. We thought that would be cool. So we went down to McDonald's, and somebody in that McDonald's in Germany at some town I can't even remember calls my name. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what the world? Turn around, and it was a family that lived like, I don't know, like around our area, like in the last couple of blocks. What the world are you doing here? Well, what are you doing here? And oh my goodness. And it was amazing. You know what? I don't think I've ever seen them again. I don't think I've ever seen them again. In Jerusalem, the Greeks had heard about this Jesus, and they wanted to know more about him. So they wanted to find another Greek. And in looking for that next Greek, they paid a visit to Philip, who was a disciple, who then took him to Andrew, who then took him to Jesus. Get that? So these Greeks are sitting with Jesus, and Jesus begins to tell them a story, a parable. And as he's talking about this parable, he's talking about a seed and how a seed must go into the ground, and the seed has to die before any life can come from it. And as Jesus is telling this parable, in Jesus' mind, it begins to become troubled. And I'm thinking, troubled. Jesus' mind is becoming troubled. He's becoming troubled because as he's going through this, he's realizing, oh dear. Oh dear. This is me. Now that's not new to him, but the reality that it's quickly coming is there. And in his mind, he's saying, Jesus, or God. He's saying, God, do I need to go through with this? Yes, I need to go through with this. This will bring you glory. Can you see some of the battle that could go on in your mind when you are completely human? Do I have to do this? Yes, I need to do this. But I don't want to do this. Yes, you need to do this. But I don't think I can do this. Yes, you can do this. Do you guys ever have those battles in your mind? Now remember, Jesus is completely human. So this battle is going on in his mind. And yet, in his mind, he also says, but I want to bring glory to you. As this is going on in his mind, and it comes to that point, a voice comes out of the clouds. Anybody remember any other time in John where we heard a voice come out of the clouds? When? When he was baptized. This voice comes out of the clouds again. And as this voice comes out of this clouds, he's saying, you've already brought me glory. The glory's already been done. And now, here's this. The people that heard it were like, a voice from the clouds? That wasn't even on the radar screen. So what they said instead was, oh, it's thunder. Oh, but then there was another group that said, oh, it's angels. And Jesus says, look, that voice, the voice that you heard, wasn't for my benefit. It was for yours. It was for your benefit. Jesus then went on in Act 3. And he's like, it's me. I'm the resolution. It's me. And he said, you know, to the people that were around there, and he said, when the Son of Man is taken up, all will come to him. Now remember, all those signs, everything that's happened, the people have been around him all the time. Do you know how in Acts 3 the people responded? They said, well, who is the Son of Man? Oh, my word. If I was Jesus, I'd have conked them on the head. It's like, what's the matter with you all? It's me. It's me. I'm the Son of Man. Can't you just trust me? That is the end of our three-act play. But many times after a play, there's a thing called an epilogue. And the epilogue is when the author of the play wants to come and talk to the audience or the readers and tell them a little bit more of the story, a little bit more about the characters that they've seen and what has happened. The next passage of Scripture in chapter 12 tells us a little bit more. What we realize in the epilogue is that despite everything that has been shown them with the signs, despite all the conversations that have occurred, many still did not believe. There's your first group of people. Then we see that we have a second group of people. We have the people that no matter what has happened, no matter what will be shown them, no matter what, they have so decided in them that God in Christ is not real that they are hardened beyond being reached. That's it. Then we have a third group of people. We have the people that I would call closet Christians because they are afraid. They're afraid. And in the scripture, you'll see in that epilogue that these people were afraid of losing their positions. They weren't even so much afraid of their life, but they were afraid of the power and the things that they would lose if they let anybody else know. What we've seen in the epilogue I think is us. This is us. People that are afraid of what following Christ is going to cost them. It will cost you, and by the way, it will cost you. Don't ever believe when somebody says following Christ makes life easier. That is a lie. Because if you follow Christ, it means you pick up the ways of Jesus. And the ways of Jesus led Jesus to the cross. So there are people that are afraid of what it will cost them. It will cost how you deal with your own finances. It will change. It will cost how you deal with your own time. It will change. It will cost how you look at people and what you must do for people will change. It will change. And it will cost you. Sometimes it costs you positions. Sometimes it costs you power. Sometimes it costs you friends. But listen to me. It is worth it. But it will cost you. Then there are those who have heard with us and heard and heard the stories. And we can sit in here week after week after week and hear it. But we have become hardened to the truth of Jesus Christ. Then there are those who haven't yet accepted the truth of Jesus Christ, but they haven't turned away from it. They just haven't accepted it yet. So, my question for you is, just like my grandma wrote about all of them, just like John picked up and wrote about Jesus and then put in this epilogue about the people that were there, what would you want to be written about you? But what will be written about you will be determined about what you do with Jesus. What will be written about you? Let's pray.
Thanks again for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. To learn more about us, visit us at www.olathewesleyan.org or visit us on Sunday morning at our 10:30 a.m. worship service. Thanks again.